again, like everybody else here, to profusely thank the two Irenes for an amazing event, which was extremely inspiring and nourishing on so many levels. So thank you again for that. And I'm going to start by setting up the context for the project that Meg and I were working on, Half Truths and Full Lies.
Can you read if I do that?
This new project was inspired by a previous work, which is threefold. It's an installation, single channel, and online archive called Natural Life, which challenges inequities in the juvenile justice system by depicting the stories of five individuals sentenced to life without parole since youth. Natural Life's goal was to depict the experiences of these youth who received the most severe sentence available for convicted adults, a sentence of natural life or life without parole. Formally, this was done first and foremost through the device of a split screen, at least in the installation and single channel versions. The voices are always interpreted through more than one view, older and younger, black and white, victim and perpetrator, police and convict, inside prison and outside it. The meaning of each of the two sides of the screen also mutates and alters, so there's nothing that really anchors you. Difference is the only constant. The project's aim is to depict difference as structural, and in that way to challenge the underlying presumption of the permanence and sameness that the sentence of life without parole for kids specifically claims and imposes. And so you can see that there is a singular narrative about difference that is imparted through the formal plurality of the display. And that's something that we will pick up again in the current project. So we have a statement that is singular that we are authoring and that we stand behind. In this case, about difference as a legal a requirement that is absent from the law. But the way we display it is through multiple voices and split screen and emphasis on the diversity. The project had a few iterations. One of them was an installation where the two screens were folded in a corner in a gallery space, as you see here. And within this story of the five kids that Natural Life focused on, was one story in particular of Ephraim Paredes, a Latino teen from St. Joseph, Michigan, who claimed that he was innocent. I wanted to pick up that specific story outside the scope of Natural Life, which was really focusing on the legal issue regardless of innocence or guilt, and to expand it into its own independent project. And so I approached Meg and asked her to collaborate on this new project, which initially was devised to be a single channel and linear kind of investigating into his innocence.
So Half Truths and Full Lies depicts through documentation and reenactment Ephraim's story. He was sentenced to life without parole in 1989 at age 15, which, as Tricia said, for murder that he claims he did not commit. We set out to find evidence that would undermine the prosecutor's version of events. The entire case rested on circumstantial evidence and testimonies, specifically by a group of teens who Ephraim claimed conspired against him and conspired to set him up. So they framed him for the murder of the manager of a grocery store where he worked as a bagger. As we did our research and interviews, read court transcripts, police transcripts, and other documents, things did not add up or line up linearly. We slowly realized we had an array of competing narratives. We attempted to fold it into a single channel narrative structure, but the material we found didn't point in one direction. The outcome of this plurality was that we came to believe that the prosecutor did not prove that Ephraim was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. So our challenge was to find a way to expose the gaps in the prosecutor's narrative in order to restore doubt. In other words, the nature of the material we shot dictated a display that was not linear, but rather plural and spatial. Here's a picture of the installation, the first iteration we created. So the installation takes on a Rashomon-like quality as divergent accounts of the crime accrue. These accounts reflect the perspectives of a range of individuals, from a police detective to key witnesses in the tight-knit small-town community of St. Joseph, Michigan, who singled Paradis out, as well as those whose lives were most affected by the teen's conviction. Family members, teachers, citizens who sat in judgment as jury members on the case. So those were all of the folks whose perspectives we sought and sought to represent. The project tells a story about story, one constructed by a group of teens who conspired to set up their, we believe, conspired to set up their peer, and whose narrative played on stereotypical assumptions about racial minorities, and upon which the local police and prosecutor relied. This account became the only one the public and the jury got to hear. The installation, however, is also a story about a handful of alternative, untold stories, and at their center, Ephraim's story of innocence. The project thus attempts to recuperate conflicting narrative possibilities and to investigate the nature of truth-telling in media and the law. So we're presenting the versions of the story in an array of screens with, we have 25 clips. The project could grow, actually. We have enough material to do 35 to 40. Screens. We have many more characters recorded so that you're surrounded, the voices surround you. You are sort of asked to piece things together according to your own sets of choices. Some characters repeat, some are new and don't repeat, and you can link the versions of the event in your own individual way.
And so one thing we want to emphasize is that once again the form reflected our interpretation of the case. There is more than one story. There is more than one center. What is absent from our story is the central story of the prosecutor. And we want you to stand in that center where there is one component that isn't being told, and experience the fragmented, the gaps, and the incompatibility between all the other versions of the story in order to generate doubt. So there's more than one story, and there's more than one center, and that is our story. So again, we do take on authorship on another kind of story about plural, the impact of the plural stories on the legal act, this specifically legal case. Our approach creates an alternative method of reading without losing the assets of storytelling. And there is suspense. There are characters, but viewers navigate the parts of the mosaic from different angles, piecing it together as a puzzle. The drive to unfold to the next element, however, is still driven by a narrative impetus. We feel that we manage in some way to undo the tension between spatial and temporal displays, and this tension that I think was negotiated throughout the conference here. We feel like we brought linearity to the gallery space. There is a story that unfolds there, and it is linear. And we brought space to the linear story, which was really in need of it. The interviews themselves also didn't just focus on the story. So this idea of periphery is both happening spatially in the display of the monitors and where you stand at the heart of them, but it also happens in the story itself. What we wanted to do is pick up on a social ambience that the subculture surrounding Ephraim contains, and somewhat in the manner of work like Vernon, Florida, like really get something about the texture of the place, which we again feel is maybe what led to his arrest and to his singling out as a perpetrator. Once again, ambience or periphery, the off-frame, just to pick up another theme that came up through this conference throughout, the story of the town itself is the indirect portal for understanding the story of the crime. You enter not through the center, which would have been the story of the crime. You rather enter from the periphery, and the periphery is where we feel the answer lies. So again, we're kind of bringing it back to the story itself. St. Joseph, where the crime took place, is an affluent lakeside town in western Michigan, mostly white. The implicit social bias, the racial tensions, the violence, the secrecy were manifest within the footage without being directly addressed in the interviews themselves. And so they allow you to live with them as ambience, rather than harnessing them through the interviews into a more focused and narrow story. This is really the story we wanted to tell. Moreover, we would argue that the social context is what led to the outcome of the case. The fact that all of those subtle textures that you pick up peripherally are maybe what led to the police singling out Efrain and to his arrest eventually. We're still hoping to impact the sentencing outcome because doubt is legally enough to upset his sentence. The stories conflict, and their sum does not get you closer to a truth. What we want to do is open the gaps between them and raise doubt as to their own veracity and veracity of the central story, which is absent in our case. But the paradox is that this is exactly the response that we're attempting to elicit or trigger doubt about a supposed truth of the prosecutor's narrative. So doubt again becomes a theme, just like difference becomes a theme and periphery becomes a theme in our own narrative. And it's kind of repeated and equated in the format. We have a range of characters that we'll show you now.
Yeah. We have a retired prison guard who worked with Efrain and knew him very well, a journalist who covered the story, Efrain's stepfather, and this is a shot from where he found some evidence that the family believed and others believe was planted a week after Efrain's arrest. And Karen, his high school girlfriend, who could have served as an alibi for him, but was pressured by her family not to speak out. Efrain's mother, who also had an alibi, she was home, was there when he came home.
Before the murder took place.
Before the murder took place. A police detective who transported Efrain to jail and testified against him in court and made claims about things that Efrain supposedly said in the vehicle when they were alone. This is a coworker who cleaned up the scene of the murder after the grocery, at the grocery store the next early next morning. This is Efrain's high school teacher. She testified to Efrain's character. He was an honor student, very intelligent, very energetic, and she was completely shocked when he was arrested. This is a former inmate who knew one of the other teens who got a shorter sentence, much shorter sentence than Efrain, and the teen told this person that Efrain did not kill the grocery store manager. So he knew that. The last character is the media coverage, which was very intense, and it was really in 1989, the time right after the Central Park Five murders, and the sort of discourse of wilding circulating, and the kind of level of hysteria in the local press coverage was really scary and shocking. So you see that in the piece.
And just to single out this character, Steve, will come up in some of the material that we'll show you in a minute. And he is who the person we believe is the one who framed Efrain and maybe replaced his own story with his.
Right. So interspersed with some testimonies, which we'll show you clips of, are some contemplative moments with Efrain. We will show you two clips that really demonstrate the sort of idea of ambiance and of the kind of wider context we wanted to implicate in this.
And just to kind of sum up, so there are basically layers of ambience. There is the way you view, there is the material that we extracted from the stories of the people we interviewed, which we were hoping will tell more of the story of the city. And again, we'll look at the crime from the edges of the crime, from what's off frame. And then Efrain himself, the way he was included in the piece, is not specifically talking about what happened to him, but rather talking about ways in which he creates space and alternative modes of existence in prison. So he too is looking at the periphery of the case itself. So we're going to just show you a few clips right now.
Okay, that's it. So just to, they would, you, everyone would be using headphones.
Thank you.
Thank you.